Today's high expected to be around 78. And we had a little bit of rain earlier this morning. And going to have some coming up this afternoon and into the evening.
I love that little bark at the beginning of this. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start it from the beginning.
I thought that was
again.
You.
Check it out. No.
All right. There you go.
Now, be ready, though, Dave, because Friday you are going to have a dog that doesn't bark in studio.
Cool.
We'll try to get him to bark. How about that?
Oh, that'll work. Time to bring in Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com. Hey, Mike, good morning. How are you?
Great. See, you guys are discovering all the intricacies with that fight song that I love so much.
The little bark at the beginning is awesome.
There's a lot to it. You think it's pretty simple, but then you gotta factor. You know, I like the tubas, right? When they go the boom, boom, boom. You know, there's just little parts of you know, this is really cool.
And here's the thing: when you tell Logan you like something, he's gonna let you hear it.
Yeah, you are. No offense, Mike. You're the last one of our regular callers that doesn't have a theme song, but now you do, and yours may be the best.
I think it is. It gets me going every time.
Now, it is difficult. When B.A. joins us on Wednesdays, we hit him with the Dooley's Junkyard Dogs from James Brown, which is a very close second, but I'm going to give you the nod.
I like it. I'm there, man.
All right, Mike. Yeah, and hey, if you ever have a chance, if you want to hear something else, you just let us know, and we'll get you set up.
I think that's it. Uh-uh.
All right.
That's gonna be it.
You wrote a really detailed story on DeAndre Baker catching us up with everything. What has he gotten himself into?
Well, you know, hard to say what's, guilty affidavits. Look, the guy got arrested on 8 different counts, 4 charged armed robbery counts, and the firearm thing is what puts it over the top and could lead to some serious jail time, if he's convicted. I mean, if he's convicted, he's going to jail for a while. New York Post says 15 years if he's convicted of armed robbery with a firearm. But, you know, he's got an attorney that says he's innocent, and he's out on bond right now. He posted a $200,000 bond yesterday. It sounds like there was a big gathering last Wednesday night down there in Miramar, Florida. I've been down there. It's the area. Not a bad area down there in South Florida near Fort Lauderdale, a little bit more inland, but it's got some nice homes and everything. But they were in an area where they were apparently, according to this police report, they were playing dice and an argument breaks out. And some people say they were robbed. There's affidavits saying that they weren't robbed. So it's going to be up to the authorities to figure it out. And in the meantime, DeAndre's been asked by the Giants not to be involved in team activities. So the type of crime that this is could trigger Commissioner Goodell to rule on this and take it out of the hands of the New York Giants. So, you know, this is a situation that could cost DeAndre his career unless he's found innocent.
I know the old saying, hindsight's 20/20. I'm not even sure it is in this case, because I look back at DeAndre, even the end of his career, and I'm not sure there were any signs that pointed to something this serious. I know that when he decided to sit out of the bowl game, it was new for Georgia fans to see a player that was directly related to our program here in Athens sit out of a bowl game. But that certainly isn't a red flag saying that he could potentially go rob somebody. But one thing in hindsight I do look at is the mysterious drop where he was expected. The initial reports very, very early in the first round, but if you want to call the tail end 30 in the first round a drop, maybe that was some indication that NFL teams were shying away from him. Can we look back and decipher anything from that at all?
Well, my takeaway is this, and I don't know. This is, if you're Georgia, look, we know that they're not going to bring out 50 guys for interviews every week. But I think DeAndre Baker was kind of hidden from the media. Honestly, he would come out after games once in a great while. So let's just say you've got a guy who, and DeAndre was a very confident guy, and he would sometimes say, we're going to win or we're going to do this, and you don't really want a guy to give that bulletin board material. Or maybe this guy's not the best in front of the media, So you bring other guys out that are. Now, that makes sense. But on the other hand, you know, eventually these guys are going to have to talk in public and be accountable. And I don't think you do them any favor by hiring them from the media. I really don't. I think kids should, you know, if they get requested, they should talk. And they should learn how to talk. And they should learn how to be accountable. And they should learn how to represent themselves. You know, one of the things about the story that I wrote last night that I didn't think came off well was that his attorney issued an apology on his behalf. Shouldn't that have been DeAndre issuing an apology? And why wasn't he able to issue his own apology? Why did somebody else have to put it in their words? So to me, if DeAndre Baker is out of college with a degree from Georgia and can't speak for himself, I think that's a failing. I also think that that's something that's going to change with name, image, likeness. You guys know I champion Kirby Smart as a coach who knows how to change with the times because he's young, because he's capable. I think he's going to be more resilient to some of these rule changes than somebody older like a Nick Saban or a Mac Brown. But one area where I think George is going to have to change is with their accessibility, because when these kids come to school, they're going to be looking to represent themselves. They're going to be looking for opportunities to endorse name, image, likeness. And if you don't give them a chance to talk here, guess what? They can go to Clemson and talk to the media there. Listen, guys, I was in the Clemson locker room after their spring game last year. In the locker room after the game, when I covered Michigan State, open locker room after every game for Tom Izzo's team. So changes are coming. I think Kirby, this is something Kirby will manage. And if there was one area where I think there was a failing with DeAndre Baker, it's that he wasn't ever held accountable, you know, in terms of meeting with the media and learning how to represent himself after games. And that's too bad, because when you're a first-round draft pick in New York City, you better learn how to represent yourself.
Yeah, it was weird, too, because I guess he was the first-round pick of the Giants, but he was actually their, third pick in that draft. I think they had three first-round draft picks. So they had
– he was the first cornerback off the board.
Yeah.
And to Logan's point, I never really finished where to hit the Logan's point, David. You know, they said he didn't interview well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He didn't interview well with teams. So, again, there's that coming back to bite you. You know, a guy doesn't talk to the media, doesn't know how to talk. He goes in there, he talks to teams, and he doesn't interview well. So, you know, maybe it was a pain and he didn't want to have to show up once or twice a week, or maybe Kirby would rather send the tight end, you know, eight times in one season. But in the end, who does it really hurt?
Well, I know we know how much Georgia puts out there for recruiting and you know, the big schools, how much money is spent. But, you know, you're talking – I agree with you about the freshmen, you know, should probably be exposed a little bit more to the media than they are. But it would seem to me like if that were a recruiting tactic that's used against Georgia, then we'll start to see that change a little bit. Do you think this is something that just all stemmed from what they did at Alabama? Does Alabama still do it the same way? I'm not even positive. Did we get a lot of exposure to Tua when he was a freshman? I'd have to go back and look. I'm not sure.
Well, he wasn't playing much. Remember, they didn't.
Yeah.
You know, Nick Saban didn't put him in the game when they lost by more than 10 points to Auburn, which should have knocked him out of the playoff picture. Nick Saban didn't put him in that game. Now they ended up getting what it amounted to an at-large spot without even playing in their conference championship game after losing by double digits. So we didn't really know about Tua.
Yeah.
You know, until he played. And I'll say this, you know, listen, you guys know that I come on here and I'm not going to talk about Jacksonville today.
Thanks, man.
I say that's one thing that the school can do for Kirby. Well, let me tell you, there's one area. I don't want everybody to, you know, 99% of the stuff I say about Kirby Smart, I think he's the smartest guy in the room. And I think he's a future Hall of Fame coach. I think he's going to win national championships. I think he's responsible for taking, but the one blind spot that Kirby has, and I don't know if he recognizes it or he just doesn't know how to use it, but Georgia has the best sports information department in the country. And to the public, they go, well, so what? No. They have the best PR department in the country, and it's not even close. They have a legend working for them who knows how to make everybody feel good and who knows how to make every media expense, every media opportunity positive, who knows how to train athletes to go out in front of the public and speak. Listen, I go and I talk to that Georgia baseball team. These kids represent themselves every bit as good as any Major League Baseball clubhouse I've ever been in. I talked, you know, Tom Crean's basketball guys, I thought they did an incredible job sitting out in the room, and that's Mike Mobley at work. They have got the most talented sports information guys available to train these student-athletes, and Kirby does not use that resource. So I complain at Georgia for not using the resource of Sanford Stadium in a home-and-home, and I call Kirby out because I don't think Kirby understands yet how to maximize himself or his program in the media. Now, at Alabama, it's different. Okay, at Alabama, it doesn't matter. I really don't think it matters, okay, because Alabama, I'm going to say it, nobody's going to want to hear it, they got more tradition than Georgia. They do. Alabama and Notre Dame, those are two programs that have more tradition and more of a national image than Georgia does. So how does Georgia change that? Well, Kirby's going to say, this is a bunch of BS. You win football games and it changes. Well, Kirby, it took decades for Alabama to get where they got. It's going to take 2 decades for Georgia to build something like that. Look at Florida State. You know, how long did it take Florida State before they were really able to get that image out there? So, to me, you know, and I'm not, listen, this isn't, you know, I'm not blaming all this on Georgia not letting guys do interviews. But, no, listen, DeAndre Baker is a guy who didn't grow up, in my opinion, who didn't mature. And, unfortunately, after 4 years in the Georgia culture, didn't buy in to what Georgia is. Because he wasn't acting like this in Athens, Georgia, okay? When I say acting like this, I mean being at a party and a gathering where there's a gun present and, you know, allegedly, I mean, part of this is just putting yourself in a bad situation. And then you also read that he struggled the first half of his rookie year. I mean, it has all the markings of someone who had a lot of money, power, and fame immediately and didn't know how to manage it.
Talking with Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com.
Mike, I was excited at an article you wrote over the weekend. Something that fuels a lot of conversation with me and Dave on this here little radio show are lines, odds. And some of those have been released for the Georgia upcoming football season. As you mentioned right there in the headline, Georgia favored in 5 of the 6. No surprise they're the underdog going to Tuscaloosa. But is there anything about those lines that jumped out to you as maybe fair or unfair when it comes to the early wise guy prediction?
Yeah, well, those lines are designed to get money bet on both sides.
Right.
So they're there to take advantage of public perception. I guess it shows us just how strong a belief Florida people have that the Gators are good. I mean, the Georgia-Florida line, granted that game's only played, you know, 70 miles away from Gainesville, but still, I would have guessed that Georgia would put more than 3.5-point favorite. Now, maybe they factor in the travel with COVID-19. I mean, that's going to be a disadvantage for Georgia. I mean, travel is going to be complicated this year, and, you know, that non-neutral site becomes even more non-neutral. At least Mark Rick said last week it wasn't a neutral site, and I think he would know. But, 3.5 points over Florida, that seemed low to me. I was a little surprised by that. I was also surprised they didn't put on the line for Georgia-Tennessee. That tells me that, you know, Vegas kind of taking a wait-and-see on Tennessee. Maybe they've got a suspicion that Tennessee might be a little better than we think. Also surprised, Florida favored over LSU next year. So there were a few games in there that they kind of caught my attention.
Yeah, and it is kind of interesting, to, like you said, these lines are set up, perception, trying to get people to move on both sides. But it's still out there for something to consume, and certainly always interesting. All right, before we let you go, tell us a little bit about what you think the presidents in the SEC at some point here in the next, either this week or next week, are going to have a vote to when allow players to come back in. If it's June 1st, I mean, that's 2 weeks from today. So can they have a vote later this week or early next week and still have them come in June 1st? Or are we starting to think maybe it might be the middle of June now? Or, you know, is it just hard to speculate?
Right. Well, the NCAA Board of Governors is expected to lift the moratorium for no activity on campus that runs through May 31st. That has to happen first. But, yeah, there's been some reports that May 22nd is the day that SEC presidents are going to vote on this, and it could be June 1st or June 15th. And it would really just be more the resocialization period being started, not really football. In fact, I think I saw the NCAA chief medical doctor there suggesting maybe the first 2 weeks they come together and they train without a football. They don't even share a football, right? They're just out there conditioning and training, and they're doing it in smaller groups. Certainly quarantine would be in effect. But to your question, David, I believe, you know, June 1st and June 15th are two of the options. When I asked Greg McGarrity about this, you know, Greg, you know, there's ADs around the league that are leaking all this different stuff out. And, you know, even though it's supposed to be a confidential vote, even though it's supposed to be confidential information, and, you know, Greg McGarrity's not that guy. He's just not that guy that's going to leak stuff out from Commissioner Sankey. I mean, he's been in this league a long time, and, you know, there may be some of these ADs out there that, you know, want to leverage and, you know, try to get what they want so they leak things out. But that's not who Greg is. But Greg did clear it up and say, you know, that's two of several. June 1st and June 15th are two of several things that are going to be discussed. So, you know, it doesn't work for the system when people are leaking things out, okay? All it does is create stress and consternation and give people time to shoot holes in ideas. So I think Greg Sankey has done an outstanding job trying to outline, trying to be responsible with what information's out there. Certainly Greg McGarrity, you know, he follows the directives of the SEC commissioner, and yet he's a truthful guy who's accessible, which is tough. You know, some of these, you know, AD, some of them are, you know, in the reporter's ears telling them what they want them to know, and some of them just don't talk at all. And I think McGarrity's a guy that walks that fine line where he's accessible, and, you know, he's going to be accountable and answer your questions, but he's not going to answer any questions that are, you know, outside of his jurisdiction. So I appreciate that, guys. You know, listen, I'm not comfortable, you know, complaining about anything as a reporter, and I certainly hope it didn't come across that way when I talked about, you know, Kirby maybe not maximizing that public relations department. But to me, you know, I just can't say enough for those guys that work over there, David. You work with them, and Logan, you do too.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys have dealt with the sports information departments. You know what I mean as far as what we have here, right?
Unbelievable. They are the best. Hey, I know one other thing I was going to ask you. Non-Georgia. So you used to cover NASCAR. Did you watch the race yesterday?
I did. I watched most of it. I didn't watch the end of it. I had stuff I had to do. There was Sunday's not a day off when you cover sports because you've got things to write. And obviously that Deontay Baker story kept unfolding yesterday. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it was good to see the cars back on the track. You know, Darlington is an old storied raceway that once led to good racing. You know what happened was a lot of these open wheel guys got the series. We say open wheel, and like mini car type of guys, right? Guys that raced midgets. They don't like to race side by side. I think where stock car went wrong is that they don't race side to side as much. They just don't. And it's more single file, and now there's stage racing. And you know, I hate to say that because, but listen, man, I covered NASCAR in the '90s and earlier this millennium, and you know, man, you went to Bristol. It was door to door, and you were edge of your seat for, you know, 3 hours. You know, and if there wasn't somebody up front fighting for it, it was the guy at the end of the tail end trying to block the leader from lapping him. And I mean, you could listen in on the radios, and there was all sorts of stuff being said. And I thought NASCAR really was at its peak. And you know, this is an opportunity with NASCAR being back and having a captive audience for them to really, you know, get back out in front and get that sport kickstarted again. And I hope we see some better racing coming up here soon so that people who maybe don't normally watch NASCAR tune in and, you know, and stay tuned in. You know, it's an opportunity for them to, you know, you talk about access. You know, they need to put these drivers out in front of people. That's what captures people's attention. I mean, those characters that they used to have, whether it was, you know, Darrell Waltrip or Sterling Marlin or Ernie Irvin or Ricky Rudd or Dale Earnhardt or the Labonte brothers, you know, my goodness, Dale Jarrett. There was so many guys, you know, that you couldn't wait to hear what they had to say. I remember walking around the hall as Jeff Gordon was a great interview, Ray Evernham, the crew chief, Larry McReynolds. These were stops that I would go through the haulers every Friday and Saturday after practices or after qualification from hauler to hauler and interview after interview and one story after another. Derek Cope was a guy who would always tell me what was going on. Steve Grissom, the good guy from Gaston, Alabama, right? Even Bill Elliott made a little time for you even once he was a car owner. Explained to me, why aren't you as fast anymore? Cubic dollars didn't have the money to compete with the super teams like Rick Hendrick and like Richard Childress. So to me, those were, I could name all, but guys, how many names can we name right now? I mean, Jimmy Johnson, Kevin Harvick, and who else? I guess Joey Logano, Kozlowski. I can't tell you their crew chiefs. I can't tell you their stories because they don't talk about them anymore. They get out in front with all those sponsors and nobody wants to say anything. And it's just not as colorful and fun as it used to be. And I hope that NASCAR takes advantage of this opportunity to get these guys out front and center and lets them show a little personality.
Good stuff, man. That was a nice little, kind of like the Jordan documentary. That was a nice little stroll that you gave us through NASCAR 90s and all that good stuff. And I liked all those names. I appreciate that.
I got one more thing I want to ask Mike about. Mike, we went an entire weekend, I'm talking Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, without a single commit to the Tennessee Vols, and it seems like their recruiting has fallen off a cliff. Is something wrong on Rocky Top, and is Pruitt on a hot seat now?
Yeah, well, they've used up 21 commitments. They've only got four spots left. Right? And it's interesting because, I was reading something, and boy, the fans, they can really just turn cannibalistic on you there.
They hit me last week too.
This guy's transferred. Yeah, but he wasn't good enough, so he's gone. You know, Pruitt's being honest. He's like, wait a minute. You signed this kid up and offer him a scholarship. You tell him he's a ball for life. It's your phone. You know, just like now, this class they got now. Well, we got 21. Yeah, he got 12 3-star. Yeah, well, we're just going to get rid of some of those guys and recruit. Oh, that's real nice. Do they know that? Do they know that you're going to take the scholarship away that you promised them and recruit over them? It's just the whole – some of that stuff with college football. So that's why when you say Georgia's only got seven or Alabama's got four, they don't want a divorce. They don't want to marry 10 players and know they got to divorce three of them 6 months from now. You know what I'm saying? So why take the commitment unless you're sure? You don't want to mess with that family. That family's going to spend time coming to your campus, getting to know the team, and then what? You're going to pull the rug out from under them? I mean, that quarterback, listen, guys, I'll tell you a quick story before I go. We're going to run over here a little bit. So okay. I was covering Tennessee. And I would go down and I would talk to these guys that signed with the program, kind of like I did with Kenny McIntosh and Lawrence Cager last year. Mm-hmm. So I'm flying down to Florida to see Michael Penix. And I hadn't really met Jeremy Pruitt but a couple times. So my plane lands. When I land, I turn my phone on and it says Michael Penix no longer committed to Tennessee. And he's supposed to sign the next week. So I tell my boss, you know, Michael Carvel, who you guys know, works at Dog Nation. I say, man, my plane just landed. I got 3 days reservations here, and what am I going to do? Because this guy, he's like, what do you want to do? I said, I'm going to go talk to the kid anyway. He said, go for it. So I go talk to the kid, and I said, what's going on? And the parents tell me, well, when he got hired, he said that we'd have a scholarship, and, you know, 5 days later, the running backs coach telling us we don't have a scholarship. So we got to find a school for my son to sign with in the next, you know, week because he's going to be an early enrollee. So I hung out. And I watched South Florida come in and Florida State and Indiana, and I covered his recruitment. We did a live video talking to him about being committed to Tennessee. His parents went to school up at Tennessee Tech, always dreamed of him going there, told him he had a scholarship, then they took it away, you know, and he ended up at Indiana. Had a great career, great season. Probably would have played against the Vols if he wasn't hurt last year, and they probably would have beat him if Michael Penix would have played. But it's kind of interesting to see how that worked. And, you know, and I later asked Jeremy about it, and he just said, well, the guy just – we did him a favor. He wasn't going to fit in our offense. So when coaches' changes happen, you know, now, did they do him a favor? Because Tennessee's quarterback situation doesn't look that good to me still. But they said, you know, he was, you know, and it was really more Jeremy's offensive coordinator, who's not Western Kentucky, that pulled the plug. But these are things you got to consider. There can be coaching changes. That, you know, for all the talk we've got right now about different programs and their commitments, what if there's a new offensive coordinator after the season? What if Jim Chaney has to social distance and decides to retire? You know, now all of a sudden, maybe the offensive coordinator that wanted player A, B, and C isn't there anymore. Or maybe the staff isn't there. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I don't necessarily think Tennessee's going to lose their staff. But these are things when you think about early commitments, there's just a lot of time. You know, like I said, Tennessee had the number one class in the SEC going into the 2017 season. And then Butch Jones got on the hot seat, and then Cade Mays decommitted. And that was before his dad got his finger cut off in the chair. But then he came to Georgia. So things can change. You never know what coaching staff is going to move around, and you never know what chair might take a finger from you. That's the moral.
Never
story.
Know.
Hey, great stuff, Mike. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And we will catch you in 2 weeks because next week is Memorial Day, Monday. So we'll catch you on June 1st, believe it or not. So I know we'll have plenty to talk about then. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
There we go.
A little extra go Georgia Bulldogs for you. I was going
to throw that in there if you want to. I do like that dog bark.
It's a good start.
Kathy emailed while we were talking to Mike, 960theref at cmg.com. If they hold the game in Jacksonville without fans, would you still go to tailgate?
Yes, because it's a beach vacation.